every day. Makes me wanna holler, go away. I need more peace and hope and love. Where do I find it in this crazy old world?
I need strategies, strategies for every radio. Your dose of radio rehab. Strategies for every radio.
Lauren and David share strategies for living, and it makes me aware.
I've got strategies, I got strategies for living.
Strategies for living radio.
Your dose of radio rehab. Strategies for living radio. Your dose of radio rehab. Strategies for living radio.
Oh, you know we need them. We need strategies. We need strategies for living. So are you ready? You ready for your daily dose of radio rehab?
I think I'm ready.
Yeah? Hey, folks, welcome. Welcome into 101.7 FM, 710 Kiel. Welcome into Strategies for Living. I'm Dr. David McMillan. She is psychotherapist Lauren Leon McMillan. You know what we're going to talk about today?
What are we talking about today?
We're talking about warfare. We're talking about Russian mercenaries.
Okay.
We're talking about death.
Okay.
In fact, death is our business.
Mm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see how this unravels into some strategies for living.
I kind of thought you'd be mad at me.
No.
No?
Why would I be mad at you?
Well, this is all the stuff that you don't like to talk about.
Well, I mean, it's there. It's out there in the world, right? And so I think it's important that, you know, I don't like to turn a blind eye to it. I don't like to discuss it on the daily basis, but I know it's happening out there. And if, you know, I'm a firm believer in curiosity, and
okay,
we can learn something from everything.
That will be a relief to our life strategist today, that he doesn't have to come in and do
marriage
counseling therapy
today.
And marriage counseling
I'm
today.
Open.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Lauren, because this is we're going to talk to John Lechner today.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a new book out. It's called Death is Our Business.
Mm-hmm.
Russian Mercenaries and the New Era of Private Warfare.
Mm.
And anybody that listens to us on a regular basis is going to say,
what
are you talking about? What? I thought I was tuned into Strategies for Living. Yar. Yar.
Yar.
Yar.
Letting that southern snick out.
And I tell you, you know, as you know,
mm-hmm,
I listen to the news every morning. Mm-hmm. I get my dose. I get my dose of news every evening. And I've been following a lot of this stuff, I guess, for years now.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, John is talking about some things that we probably all need to be interested in and know more about.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Death is Our Business, Russian Mercenaries and the New Era of Private Warfare, mm-hmm, is on tap today here on Strategies.
All kinds of new ventures.
Yeah,
today.
We appreciate you being with us, folks. We appreciate our sponsors making it all possible. The Robinson Film Center and Azalea Cleaners. And Pintail Roofing.
Oof, oof.
And Learning RX and the Balanced Life Wellness Center. And for Tita's Delicatessen, home of the Godfather, Alligator Italian Sausage. Back in a moment with John Lechner, the author of Death is Our Business, here on Strategies. Welcome into Strategies for Living. Lauren Leon McMillan, David McMillan. Let's welcome into the program now our life strategist. He is John Lechner. And John is a journalist, an independent researcher, and consultant. to NGOs and other institutions working in Africa. He holds a master's degree in foreign service from Georgetown University. He speaks Russian, French, Turkish, Georgian, Chechen, Sango, French. Man, I could go on and on. His reporting has been featured in outlets such as the New York Times, the Atlantic, the Washington Post, the BBC, and published in Foreign Policy, Lawfare, and War on the Rocks, among others. He's a native of Boston and now lives in Washington, D.C. John Lechner, welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to Strategies for a Living.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, you're a different kind of life strategist for us. So
I was frantically during the break trying to come up with marriage counseling advice and some other things, but
we'll try not to get into too many arguments. We'll try to help you out there, John.
I'll do my best.
Well, as I was thinking about it, I thought that given how much work I've done spending time with Russian mercenaries, that I actually have a few clients for you all, perhaps.
I love it, or
some future listeners. Yeah,
we'll take both.
Yeah.
All right. So this, you couldn't get a more timely topic than your writing. But when did the book? The book is "Death Is Our Business." I'll hold it up here to the radio so people can see it.
If you're listening on podcast or YouTube, you will be able
you
to
will,
see
yeah.
it.
Yeah, if you're listening on our podcast, you'll see the book cover. But it's an interesting interesting title. Death Is Our Business. Get your attention. Mm-hmm. How did this get your attention, John? What kind of led you and inspired you to begin to investigate the Wagner Group and the broader topic of Russian mercenaries?
Sure. I mean, I think, and this is probably, I think, what would be in particular applicable to sort of life strategies is I was initially, after college, an investment banker working in finance. And like you mentioned, my real passion in life was for language learning and linguistics,
right?
And traveling, history and culture. I had spent time living in Russia before college, and then was a Russian studies major in college. And then, like a lot of folks, I kind of followed the herd mentality, and a lot of people were going into banking where I was, and so I thought that I could somehow find a way to work on Wall Street and still also kind of pursue my interests. And for a long time, I was trying to kind of fit a round peg into a square hole. Mm. And eventually, I finally kind of was able to admit to myself that working in finance, even though there were aspects of it that I really enjoyed, less so working 100 hours a week, but some of the more kind of intellectual endeavors, I still was ultimately driven by curiosity for some of these places in the world: Russia, the former Soviet Union,
right.
Africa,
right.
And so I eventually left banking and came down to Washington, D.C. and started to pursue a career in journalism and in writing. And like I said, I had lived in Russia. I speak Russian, and I had been spending more time in Africa. And around 2018, this group of Russian mercenaries touches down in the Central African Republic, which is a country that is quite aptly named. It's pretty much right smack in the middle of Africa,
right.
To the north of Congo and to the south of Chad. And I felt that this was a great confluence of my interests, and I decided I wanted to be the person to go there and write about it. And so I first started arriving in 2019 and covering the conflict, and eventually it became clear to me, especially as these Russian mercenaries were showing up in more and more places, that I wanted to be the person to write a book about it.
Hmm. What do we need to, you know, Lauren and I are a bit different. There's a bit of a difference in our age. I'm 68 years old. So I very much grew up, you know, my early memories are the every Saturday at noon, the, you know, the air raid sirens being tested. Opening the trunk of your car. Every time you opened the trunk of your car, there was the box of food in the corner of the trunk, reminding you that at any moment, you know, you could be told to go to the fallout shelters, right? So I grew up under that and under the old Soviet Union and you know, people like Khrushchev and you know, all the other names leave me at the moment, besides, you know, the last, Gorbachev. But I remember when Gorbachev came along and the sense of freshness and newness. And then when, you know, when he did tear down that wall, as Mr. Reagan asked, not that he did it right away, but the wall came down and the Soviet Union collapsed. And there was this period of hopefulness and newness and wonderment. And by the way, at one point, I even remember Russia, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, saying, we're open to being in NATO. And all of that, you know, seemed to... I know it didn't happen overnight, but it almost seemed to change overnight in my psyche. What happened?
Where did it go wrong?
Yeah, real easy question for a life strategist, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, there wasn't just, you know, any one particular event that we can point to. I think, you know, in terms of sort of explaining in part the Russian mentality is that for, you know, particularly in the West, which celebrated the Soviet collapse as this great kind of opportunity for freedom and democracy, that was also certainly celebrated by a lot of the states, either in the Warsaw Pact at the time, which was sort of the Soviet Union's answer to NATO, Poland, exactly.
Right.
They were certainly kind of enjoying newfound freedom outside of the Soviet yoke, as well as a number of countries that declared independence. And Russians, too, at the time, were very kind of excited about democracy and the capitalism. But ultimately, the switch from a Soviet economy to a market-oriented economy was, for the vast majority of Russians, disastrous. And people went from having a, you know, a relatively modest but okay, sustainable means of living to basically living in third world poverty. And so the 90s were both this time, as you mentioned, after Gorbachev, of this kind of great opening and a degree of democracy. But they were also a time of incredible economic privation and chaos, a lot of gangsters kind of taking over businesses, shootouts in the streets. And so they're not necessarily always kind of thought of very fondly by many Russians. Under Vladimir Putin, you know, he sort of kind of positioned himself as a stronger leader than Yeltsin, who I'm sure you can remember at the time.
Boris Yeltsin, sure.
A bit of a drinking habit. just a bit.
Had a red nose most of the time.
Red nose most of the time, kind of not always pursuing a healthy lifestyle, as folks on the show would know. And Putin kind of represented sort of this kind of new strength of putting Russia back on its feet. And for Russians as well, it was not just a question of sort of the domestic issues that they faced, but also what is their what is their position on the world stage? They had gone from a superpower to a very weak country pretty much overnight. And so Putin was able to really tap into that as he consolidated power at home, and then looked to kind of flex Russia's muscles again on the world stage. And that put them ultimately in conflict with the West, who, you know, from the Russian mindset, had taken advantage of Russia's weakness at that time in the 90s and expanded NATO up to Russia's borders.
Right. So from their perspective, we got some catching up to do. Okay, so we got to take a break. I got to take a break here. When we come back from this break, let's start at 2014, because it's 2014 and there's a very well-trained band of these mercenaries who arrive in Ukraine. And that's part of Russia's first attempt, really, to do what we're seeing playing out now in Ukraine. Can we start there when we come back from break?
Of course.
All right.
Absolutely.
We are we're learning a lot today from John Lechner. His book is Death Is Our Business: Russian Mercenaries and the New Era of Private Warfare. We're learning a lot. It's an in-depth and well-written chronicle. John Lechner is with us as our life strategist today. He's telling us things we all need to know. We'll be back. More strategies for living to come. You're going to see the difference when you go to Azalea Cleaners. You'll hear about it, too. Azalea Cleaners has been fine dry cleaning since 1958, plus laundry, alterations and repairs, comforters, wedding gown cleaning and restoration. You'll hear about it from your friends because they'll see it, too. They'll notice the Azalea difference. Azalea is convenient. 732 Azalea Drive, 9220 Ellerby Road, and 9227 Mansfield Road. Plus, the front door of your home or business with Azalea's delivery on demand. Just text SETUP to 249-8283 and Azalea will pick up your clothes and deliver them back clean and fresh to you. You can't get closer than that. That's the Azalea difference. You'll notice it right away. Others will too. The Azalea difference. Fine dry cleaning since 1958. Text SETUP to 249-8283 and get the Azalea difference. AzaleaCleaners.com.
Hi, this is Jay Merle for Pintail Roofing. Let's talk about quality. When you hire Pintail to build your roof, here's what you can expect. Quality and quality control are the most important concerns for us at Pintail, and you need to know that Pintail stands tall with swift and professional performance on any warranty call. This is our most important policy. And remember, we're your neighbors. We'll be here for you for the long haul. Our family's lived here for over 100 years, and we aren't going anywhere. On the commercial side of Pintail's business, our fluid applied roofing solutions can save thousands of dollars over conventional commercial roofing options. Call Pintail at 226-ROOF for a free inspection of your home or commercial building. That's 226-7663. Pintail Roofing. What's the condition of your roof?
Facing the same old problems day to day makes you wanna holler, get away. Looking for the road that'll get me there. Looking for hope and peace to spare. Looking for strategies, strategies for leaving radio. Your dose of radio rehab.
And welcome back. Welcome back into your dose of radio rehab. We call it Strategies for Living. Lauren Leon McMillan, David McMillan. We're with John Lechner today. His book is Death Is Our Business: Russian Mercenaries and the New Era of Private Warfare. And you'll find Death Is Our Business at your favorite bookseller, wherever you buy books. I'll make a play. I mean, I'd like you to get the book, folks. But if you can, get it at your local brick and mortar bookstore. And I just make that request because I want to keep them healthy. I want the bookstores to stay around, John.
I'm with you on that one, especially good old independent bookstores, yes, too.
Amen. Amen. All right, so it's 2014. Here's this band of mercenaries, pretty mysterious. They show up in Ukraine. They are, I guess it's Russia's first attempt to take the country, mm-hmm, right? And it's the Wagner Group, and they fade back into the shadows. Then they reemerge in the Middle East. They're going toe-to-toe with us, with the United States,
yeah,
and then in Africa. And they earn praise for tough measures against insurgencies. And it, for a little while in the news, it was hard to tell, at least from my perspective, are these good guys? Do they wear white hats or black hats? I mean, am I, am I alone here? Mm-hmm. You know? Because
I mean, it depends. They wear a little bit of, I mean, it's a little bit of both. And certainly it depends on, which side you're on, either facing them or with them as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of people know the name, and I hope I'm going to say it correctly. Yevgeny Prigozhin. I hope I'm saying that right.
Pretty good. Yevgeny Prigozhin.
Yeah. And a lot of people know from the news, he was known as Putin's chef. And so
that's right.
He went from a caterer to commander, and then to a threat to Putin. Okay, so sort this out for us, John. This Prigozhin thing, the late Mr. Prigozhin now.
The late, yeah, absolutely. So he was a guy who sort of grew up on the wrong side of the tracks in the Soviet Union. And he became sort of a street thug and a thief, and he ultimately went away to prison for 8 years. For assault and robbery. And when he gets out of prison, as we mentioned, the Soviet Union under Gorbachev is collapsing around him. And,
right,
and he returns to his native St. Petersburg and falls in with a couple of gangsters. Like we mentioned before, in the 90s, there's a lot of organized crime taking over a lot of businesses, and some of Prigozhin's gangster friends set him up in a grocery store business at first, as a manager.
Okay.
He eventually then puts himself in a position to be a restaurateur, and he becomes the owner of two very fancy restaurants in St. Petersburg that really cater to the nouveau riche, the Russian elite
right,
at the time, including a younger Vladimir Putin. And Putin and the other Russian elite really enjoyed the restaurant they served. I mean, it was all the kind of, champagne from France, expensive caviar, steaks from Japan, the more expensive, the better. And Prigozhin was this consummate kind of ambitious networker, and so he uses those contacts to eventually become the contractor to provide meals for the Russian military and for Russian schools, which earns him the nickname, as you said, Putin's chef. But you wouldn't want to buy his book on healthy living. He cut costs wherever possible, and poisoned quite a number of Russian soldiers and school children with his food.
Oh, Lord.
So he wasn't one known for quality, but he was always good at putting himself in the right place. And as you mentioned, when a revolution is starting in Ukraine in late 2013, Putin, fearing that the country is going to kind of turn again to NATO and that NATO and the U.S. is behind the revolution, first annexes Crimea and then starts supporting separatists in eastern Ukraine. But they can't, they don't want to do it openly at the time. Right. And so they turn to these mercenaries to support the rebels. And Prigozhin steps in to become sort of a financial sponsor for one of these groups. And he teams up with a former officer in Russian military intelligence, a guy, Dmitry Utkin. And they make for sort of an unlikely pair, given that Prigozhin himself is of Jewish descent. And Dmitry Utkin, again, not someone who, you know, you want to buy his any of his lifestyle books, is a neo-Nazi. And a big fan of the German composer Richard Wagner, and he eventually lends his call sign, which was Wagner, the one that he chose, to sort of this mercenary group.
So now, how did Prigozhin and the Wagner group? How did that kind of how did he play a pivotal role in Wagner Group and, you know, their strategies and their operations?
Well, I mean, I think he never had like a military background himself. That was always taken care of by guys like Utkin, who had that military background. But what he was good at, and I think what sort of applies to our world more generally right now, is that he was ultimately an entrepreneur, and he happened to work in a space that, you know, the service he was providing was basically men with guns, but he was essentially a logistics operation, and what he was particularly good at was finding places to go, especially in places like Africa, where he could market his services to Putin, kind of justifying why it's important for Russia to be in this place, because it shows that Russia is back on the world stage and is a great power. And it just so happened, too, that there was ample opportunity for Prigozhin to make money in doing so. And he's not alone. We have plenty of those types of companies, both here in America, in Russia, and all over the world, and plenty of individuals like Prigozhin who ultimately profit from warfare.
How did things turn sour between Prigozhin and Putin?
Well, you can imagine that someone kind of as uncouth and ambitious as Prigozhin makes a lot of enemies along the way.
Yeah.
And one person in particular who he had issues with was the Russian Minister of Defense, Sergei Shoigu. And this was because Prigozhin had sort of a on again, off again, direct line of communication to Putin himself. But he would often be working underneath the Minister of Defense because Wagner was providing military services. And so you can imagine this is sort of like if you're the boss of an employee, but that employee is actually the son of the CEO, right? And so you know you can give them an order, right? But you also know that person has a different line of, you know, channel around you. And things can come back in a way that's unpleasant. And so for Shoigu in particular, the Minister of Defense, Prigozhin often rubbed him the wrong way. And so when Wagner was participating in the full-scale invasion of Ukraine, which began, as your listeners, I'm sure, remember in February 2022, there was a lot of enmity between these two figures, because Prigozhin is promising these big victories and trying to make Shoigu look bad. The Minister of Defense is trying to do everything he can to squeeze Prigozhin out of the war. He cuts him off from his ability to recruit men for the front line. And then ultimately he makes a move to try and take over Prigozhin's mercenary force. And in Russia, especially for Prigozhin at that time, having men under your command makes you political and a threat. And so Prigozhin recognized that if he takes the men away from him, if the men are taken away from him, then he himself will become irrelevant. And for someone kind of as egomaniacal and narcissistic at that point, I think there was no chance that he was going to retire to a log cabin in Siberia and chop wood kind of quietly for the end of his days. And so he decides to stage a mutiny, and he decides he's going to try and capture and kill the Minister of Defense.
Ultimately, that didn't turn out very well for Mr. Prigozhin.
It did not. It blew up in his face, as they say.
I can't top that one, so let's go to break. Death is our business. Russian mercenaries and the new era of private warfare. John Lechner is our life strategist today here on Strategies for Living. We've got more to talk about, more to come. Stay with us. Hey, let's talk about the Robinson Film Center. You know, I say it a lot. There's no place like the
Absolutely
Robinson.
Absolutely, there is not.
617 Texas Street, downtown Shreveport. You've got so much. You've got the movies. You got Abby Singer's Bistro on the second floor of RFC, open for lunch and dinner Tuesday through Saturday.
Newly remodeled.
Absolutely. Great menu. RobinsonFilmCenter.org is the way you check it all out. You can go to RobinsonFilmCenter.org at any time and find out what movies are showing. Here's the deal. You want to join the crowd, join the fun, become a member. When you become a member, you become a star. You get discounts on movies, you get concession upgrades, you get bistro deals. RFC, 617 Texas Street in downtown Shreveport. I'll say it again. There's no place like the Robinson.
There is not, and I'm glad we have one right here.
Absolutely. The Robinson Film Center. .org.
Reading begins not in the classroom, but in your child's brain. I'm Dawn Issa Walker with LearningRx Shreveport. If your child struggles to read, maybe he or she has trouble focusing or comprehending, LearningRx Shreveport offers a science solution to reading problems, working one-on-one with your child, targeting his or her reading skills. Today, call LearningRx Shreveport. Make an appointment to have your child assessed. I know you want to help your child. So does LearningRx Shreveport.
And we got them for you right here on Strategies for Living. Lauren Leon McMillan, David McMillan, our life strategist today. John Lechner, he's the author of a very important book, a very good book. You'll find it wherever you buy books. Death is Our Business, Russian Mercenaries, and the New Era of Private Warfare. You know, it's mind-boggling to me, Lauren and John. I mean, I watch, and you know, I know some people have gone over to Ukraine and you know signed up and are fighting. Mm-hmm. And I
do have a question to that kind of regard. Yeah, I mean,
I don't understand it though.
Well, right, because I know John, you've talked directly with mercenaries, right? And so my question is kind of, what psychological traits or personal stories stood out to you most in those conversations or with mercenaries in particular?
Sure. Well, I mean, a lot of the book is the time that I spent with these Russian mercenaries themselves in Africa, in Ukraine, or talking to them in Russia as well. I think, I think that there's a lot that would be familiar to folks over here, especially folks who have served in the military. I mean, the vast majority of the guys who ended up joining Wagner, especially at the beginning, they tended to be, I mean, there's a range, thousands of guys joined, but I mean, in general, they tended to be guys who had served in the Russian military, and they got out, and for whatever reason, they had a difficult time adjusting to civilian life. They didn't enjoy being sort of Russia's version of a mall cop or a grocery store security guy. And they missed kind of the sense of camaraderie that you get, the sort of the discipline that comes with being in the military.
Probably the excitement.
And that's a big factor, the excitement, the sense of adventure as well. And so, a lot of these guys, the way that they usually fell in was that a buddy of theirs would find out about this opportunity to go fight in Syria. And then he would recruit another one of his friends, and sort of the chain would go that way. And for them, this was, this is what they were good at, right? I mean, they came out of the military. This was their skill set. Now, of course, you also had, folks who were joining for, a little bit kind of less or kind of more problematic reasons, people who were drawn to the war for war's sake, or had, ideologies that were, extremist in terms of, as we mentioned before, the head commander himself was a neo-Nazi and, very much kind of believed in Russian nationalism. And so ideologically, they ran the spectrum. But I would say kind of for the most part, these were people who had a difficult time just kind of adjusting to kind of normal civilian life, and they felt the need for that adrenaline rush in some sort of way. And two,
psychologically, at the very least, they all had adjustment disorders.
Yeah. There it is.
And I don't think, it's not, I'm not, I don't want to kind of make comparison, straight comparisons, but these are also the same folks who end up joining American security firms as well, that went and worked in Iraq and Afghanistan and around the world, also were folks who, tended obviously to have served in the military. I mean, they, it's rare for school teachers to suddenly have a desire to go off and fight.
So how big is this business around the world? How big is this?
It's big. It's big. I mean, Wagner and the Russian version of it, especially the way I put it in the book, is sort of the latest iteration of something of developments that have been proceeding since really the end of the Cold War. But I mean, first, and as I mentioned, mercenaries have been around for as long as civilization has.
Sure.
It's a very old profession, but it really started the rise of this, what we would call the private military company. It really came about at the end of the Cold War, when the two superpowers, America and the Soviet Union, became less inclined to support various governments and insurgents in the third world, or the developing world at the time. And this left an opportunity for mercenaries to come in and fill that void. First, it was the South Africans coming out of the post-apartheid regime. And then really, it was in our own country after September 11th that we saw the private security industry just explode. And ultimately, we had, for every soldier on the ground in Iraq and Afghanistan, we had at least one contractor.
Huh.
And this served a number of purposes, one of which was that, you know, if the U.S. wanted to prosecute the war on terror as it did, it would have needed a civilian draft to do so if it wasn't for these contractors who were over there, right, and providing these services.
So the mercenaries and the this business kept the draft from being reinstituted. And wow.
And, well, because they really, a lot of these firms were providing security. They weren't necessarily kind of going after insurgents or terrorists, but they provided protection for convoys. And they also provided a lot of logistics, because it used to be that when the American military, you know, intervened or went to war, the military took care of all of the logistics behind
Yeah, logistics was a massive part of military.
Yeah,
you know, of
all
the military.
Cooks were in the military, yeah. Right? All of the people supplying were in the military. And now that is done largely by contractors. And so it enables the U.S. military not to have a draft. And in a way, that makes it also easier at the same time for the U.S. government to intervene abroad with relatively less input from the American public that sort of a draft would entail.
Interesting, very provocative stuff. And you can get much more as you continue the conversation, and I hope you will, by getting a copy of John Lechner's book. It's called Death is Our Business, Russian Mercenaries and the New Era of Private Warfare, at your favorite bookseller. We'll be back with to wrap up our conversation today with John Lechner here on Strategies.
You to your table, we're keeping it alive with flavors from the family passed down to survive. The Godfather's here with a twist in the tail, alligator Italian sausage, and it sure won't fail. It's the boss of the bayou, a taste you can't refuse. Italian tradition, Cajun infused. Sausage, bold and true. But Andre's bringing the bayou to you.
Get the Godfather Alligator Italian Sausage only at Fertitta's Delicatessen, 1124 Fairfield Avenue in Shreveport. Pick up a Muffy while you're there. The Godfather Alligator Italian Sausage. It's a taste you can't refuse. Sold only at Fertitta's, 1124 Fairfield Avenue in Shreveport. Dealing with stress? Pain? Feel like you're running out of options? When your life is balanced, wellness is a given. True wellness is holistic. It's about the mind, the body, and the spirit, all in balance. Now, there's a place right here in Shreveport that's all about helping us achieve peak mental, emotional, and physical health. The Balanced Life, 117 Kings Highway, right next door to Strawn's. Come see and feel the difference getting your life in balance can be. Many of your friends and neighbors have already learned the difference less stress and pain mean in their lives. You can book a discovery session right now online, thebalancedlife.us. All you've got to lose is stress, pain, or maybe both. Come see and feel for yourself the real difference balanced wellness makes. The Balanced Life Wellness Center, 117 Kings Highway in Shreveport, next door to Strawn's, thebalancedlife.us. And welcome back. Welcome back into Strategies. Strategies for Living, Lauren Leon McMillan, David McMillan, and John Lechner. He's our life strategist today. His book is Death Is Our Business, Russian Mercenaries and the New Era of Private Warfare. I should correct myself. I'm a Southern boy. I've been saying Wagner Group, and it's Wagner Group. I'm showing.
You could say Wagner too. Don't worry.
I'm showing my Southern side there, John. Yeah, that's right.
John,
what do you really want people? This is an excellent book. I wish we had more time because we've just barely scratched the surface today. And I hope people will get the book and continue the conversation, as I said, with you. But what do you really want people to take away from this excellent book, Death Is Our Business? What's your hope?
Well, I mean, look, I think this guy Prigozhin and Wagner, what he was particularly good at was selling a dream to the Kremlin of Russia returning as a great power. And what I think it shows is that geopolitical competition and wars and politics in general, it's not something that just kind of exists on its own. It's made by people, by all of us, including people like Prigozhin. And very often, what they're lobbying for is also happens to be something that is profitable to them as well. And so it's just important to remember ultimately that conflict and politics, it's created by people. It's created by ourselves. It doesn't just come down to us ex machina.
Well said. Death Is Our Business. John Lechner, thank you. Thank you for the book, and thank you for being a very good life strategist.
Thanks so much for having me.
Folks, thank you. We appreciate you being a part of Strategies for Living. And we appreciate our sponsors who make it all possible. The Robinson Film Center and Azalea Cleaners and Pintail Roofing.
Oof, oof.
And Learning RX and the Balanced Life Wellness Center. And Fertitta's Delicatessen, home of the Godfather, Alligator, Italian Sausage, and some pretty good Muffies, too. If today were the last day of your life, you only had one more phone call that you could make, who would you call? And what would you say? And why are you waiting? Make the call. For Lauren Leon McMillan and for John Lechner, I'm David McMillan. See you next time right here on Strategies for Living.